Welcome to the Atomic Podcast. Whether you're a nurse anesthesia resident in CRNA school or an RN trying to get there, you're in the right place.
I'm Sachi, and along with Rhea, we're going to talk all things anesthesia and science, and we're going to bring along some of our friends too.
Join us each week as we dive into all things science and anesthesia.
Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. Today we have part two of a live webinar recording that we did. Go ahead and listen to part one, the last episode, if you didn't catch that. This is a continuation of that live call that we had. So go ahead and enjoy.
And so some information about like some pearls from me being, you know, having all of these experience from students is that a lot of the problem is when they come in and they are so nervous, they get paralyzed and they can't think. They know everything, but they can't think. And then we went through a phase as preceptors where we tend to like quizzing students and they're so vulnerable already. And we tend to ask, okay, how does sucks work? How does this work? And the students tend to freeze all the time. And it's usually not the best time to ask questions too. Like you're, you know, they're trying to intubate and you're asking them questions. And so we've learned from all that experience and we're a lot better. Hopefully some of the preceptors are a lot better and not do that anymore.
We need to have a talk, a webinar just for preceptors, Louisa.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Because seriously, it's ridiculous. Like I remember like 12, 13 years ago when I was in training, like they were my second intubation, and I'm getting asked about all the symptoms of propofol infusion syndrome. I remember I was like, what?
So another thing about intubation, when you get so fixated on getting your intubations, what I want you to do first in your first few intubations is to recognize structures more than getting your intubation. It's like, so you go in there, oh, that's the epiglottis. Okay, oh, that's the whatever. So just kind of recognize the structure, and because that's the basis of being a good airway person. You know, it's so funny. It really goes full circle because my daughter went to a preceptorship with one of the former residents. She's now an attending anesthesiologist, and she was showing her how to intubate. And she goes, oh, yeah, your mom taught me this. I said, oh my God, it really came, you know, because I think I remember I taught her that after you intubate, listen to the left lung first, because then if you hear it there, so you're more likely in the lung that you're not main stem, kind of, I think. And so she remembered that. And she was telling my daughter 20 years later. And I was like, oh my God, I can't remember. And she's like, an attending now at Cleveland Clinic. And she remembered. So that's kind of nice that, yeah, that people remember. So also, you know, when people get fixated on, I was told by this preceptor that she wants their propofol on the left side and on the right side and all that. Try not to be affected by that too much, or try not to please the next person by doing what you learn from the other person, because those are very superficial. Mm-hmm. Just pay attention to why they're doing it more than what they're doing superficially. Like they're putting their airway on the left side versus the right, things like that. Like learn their rationale for doing things. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to have your own technique eventually. You're going to have your own system. And so for me, what I tell students, because they were like, well, so-and-so told me to do it this way. And so my next question is, did she tell you why? And do you think that that is going to be good for you? Like, you know, ergonomically for you? Is it a good thing to do? Kind of like that. So that's how I would approach that. Mm-hmm. Like if you feel like
don't people argue are with giving people you either. Like, yeah, don't argue with them and don't say the words that will get you crucified, which is, right. I know. Don't say I know.
yeah.
They will hang you for that, you know.
Yeah.
So just don't say it. Just even though it like kills you. I used to keep like a little notebook with me, and I would have everybody's name in there, and I would write these things down. Likes the tape this way. likes this, likes that, whatever. I had this like little notebook, and I just like, before I was working that pre-sub, I look at my notes, likes this, likes this, likes this, and I just did it. And it just made my day go smoother. I just didn't have to listen to the ridiculousness of like Louise is saying, this is like minutia, the stuff that, you know, doesn't, not worth arguing over.
Did you burn that little notebook after?
Yeah, I had to make sure nobody found that notebook.
Yeah, those are like little things that, as a matter of fact, I'm learning from everything you're talking about, because I'm in the process of going back to clinicals for my acute surgical pain management fellowship. So I'm going to be a novice again. So that's
back in
you're teaching me.
Role.
Yeah.
It's different though.
Yeah. So yeah, you guys, you know, also another thing I want to mention is, you know, you guys are not nursing students. You guys are experienced ICU nurses. You went through the didactic. Obviously, you're top of the top because you got into a CRNA program. So think about that a little bit. Like I said, it's so easy to fall into that, I'm going to look dumb. I don't even know how to put the EKG. You know, there's a mastectomy and I put the EKG here. And I'm so dumb, kind of like that. Don't go through that feeling or mindset, because you know you know more than a lot of these people. It's just different, you know. It's just a different field, but you know a lot, and you have a lot to offer to this field.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
Yeah. So that's one thing I want to mention. I always start with that with a student. It's like, as I see them shaking when they're debating. And I just pull them aside and say, you know more. For goodness sake, you did take care of open heart surgery. And this is a small tonsillectomy. You'll be fine, you know, kind of like that. So that's kind of how I build, how do you say, this confidence, you know, to acknowledge that they know, you know, that they're not 18-year-old nursing students, you know, that are starting. Kind of like that.
Definitely. Yeah. You know, some things that you tend to forget are like, one thing that's like a big deal, like giving mistakes that people make is like giving your pre-med before all of your safety checks are done. So like giving your pre-med before maybe the patient signed consent. That's like, you know, just keep those things in mind. Like, make sure that patients have all their paperwork done before you just sedated them, because then it's really hard to get consent when somebody's been sedated with midazolam. So, you know, go through these little checklists here for those who are getting ready to start clinical, and definitely reach out to us if you have any questions about this. The induction period, I think that this is probably what we're going to be doing a little bit more of in the beginning, is learning induction and airway. You know, things that people get really caught up on are like the intubation part, but like forgetting everything else. that's important, like blowing up your balloon, connecting to the circuit, turning on your gas. It's okay. Your preceptor's there to help you make sure you don't forget any of these steps. And as you keep doing it over and over again, some of these primary tasks and secondary tasks become second nature. As you're doing your secondary tasks, things that you'll start kind of getting the hang of is like making sure you're throwing on your bear hugger before they put on the drapes, because inevitably it's going to be a time period where you forget to do that. The drapes are on. You're like, oh crap, I forgot to put the bear hugger. And now you're crawling underneath the drapes trying to slide it on the patient. And you do that enough that you don't forget to put the bear hugger on. So these things will come over time as you just do it over and over and over again. I would be very clear in the beginning what your preceptor expects you to do versus what your preceptor is going to do. For example, we're not going to expect you to do the charting and do all these things at the same time. So just have the conversation like, hey, you got the charting. Okay, I'll focus on this. And make sure you clearly communicate with the person that's teaching you. Maintenance phase, lots of things going on here. I think that a lot of people on the outside think that, hey, this is the time that anesthesia sits back and puts their feet up and starts playing Sudoku. And while on the outside it looks like we're doing nothing, there's a lot going on during maintenance. It's just kind of all going on. And here we're constantly scanning the machines, the monitors, the patient, making sure everything's okay, vital signs, whatnot, making sure they're ventilating fine, oxygenating fine, continuing to give them medications like redosing our paralytic, giving our adjuncts and whatnot, fluid management, product management. So there's a lot of problem solving and troubleshooting that goes on behind the drape that a lot of people don't see. And finally, emergence, giving your reversals, titrating off your volatile anesthetic. Extubation is not a big focus in the beginning, but becomes a bigger focus later on. I think a lot of people judge you as an anesthesia provider by how well you extubate your patients. I always ask our nurses, I'm like, how do you judge CRNAs? And they're like, how well they wake up and if they're in a lot of pain and screaming in pain, right? That's all they see. They don't see any of the other stuff that you did during the case. So learning that finesse with your extubation, learning not to throw the bloody ET tube all over the sheets or the floor, and becoming a little bit more graceful with that. 1,000% how well you extubate. Yeah, exactly. Transporting the PACU. The PACU is a whole nother culture in itself. It's universal. You meet like one PACU nurse, I feel like you meet them all. Or, you know, it's just the culture is, it's just different. So learning that culture as well. And then your room turnover and you're doing it all over again. Make sure at the end of every day you request feedback. You actively seek it out. Don't just say, okay, peace out, see you later. I'm going to see, you know, whatever. Take 5 minutes. Take a deep breath and ask them, how do you think today went? Is there anything that I could do better on? Is there anything that I could, if there's one thing that I could focus on to, you know, focus on for tomorrow, what would it be? If you are always asking for feedback, keep in mind people may not deliver it in the most tactful or graceful or even the nicest way, right? But you got to kind of see past that and try to get down to what the core message is that they're trying to tell you. And like I said, we're going to be focusing on our growth mindset this year. So we're going to be trying to be better, focus on one thing to do better the next day. So to wrap this up, we're going to talk a little bit very briefly about soft skills and talk about some challenges that you invariably are going to face during your clinical rotations. So we call these soft skills, but I think that these are just as important, if not more important, than the other skills that you learn. And I think we call them soft skills because these are skills that are just really not easy to measure. Whereas we can measure like, can you or can you not intubate? Do you know this knowledge? Do you not know this knowledge, clinical knowledge? But soft skills are just a little bit more difficult to measure. And I think that a lot of these soft skills are really umbrella terms for a lot of little micro skills that you need to learn to be good about these things. You know, so when we say like, I don't know, a soft skill, let's just say like charisma, like it, as a soft skill, right? What is charisma or what is being like a people person? It's a cluster of a bunch of little micro skills that you can learn, that can be taught, so that you become better at that trait or whatever that is. So those skills can be like maintaining eye contact, giving a firm handshake, leaning in and actively listening to people when they talk, repeating things back to people when they talk. These are a bunch of little micro skills that then add up to having this like major soft skill, and you can learn all these things throughout time. So soft skills, personal attributes that or behaviors or attitudes that make you interact effectively with other people and engage in various professional and social settings. I think the top five soft skills that you absolutely need to have to be successful in clinical are the following here. You need to be a very good problem solver. We also call this critical thinking. That's like number one. You have to be good at solving problems. You're constantly inundated with things that happen really quickly. Desaturation. Okay. What's going on? I have to figure this out in 30 seconds. You know, is it an equipment problem? Is it a patient problem? Being able to troubleshoot that very quickly, but also, calling out for help when you need it. Effective communication, also an absolute essential soft skill that you need to have to do well in clinical. Being really flexible and really adaptable. You might have spent all night preparing your care plans for these three cases you're going to do today, only to find out in the morning that when he came in, your assignment was switched to another room, right? And especially as a novice, that's really flustering. And be like, well, but I prepared for room three, and now you're putting me in room four, and you're with a preceptor that's going to start asking you questions for cases you did not prepare for. That's flustering. That's frustrating. But having the soft skill of being flexible and being adaptable and just kind of rolling with the punches is an essential skill for being a really good anesthesia provider. Your cases get changed all the time. Emergency cases get put in your room. You're having to all of a sudden go do a case in the ICU. You have to go do it. That's your job. We're in a service profession. So being really flexible, being really adaptable. I think one of the biggest skills that people need to have is grit, honestly, and resilience. Being able to just keep putting one foot in front of the other, despite being in difficult and challenging circumstances, to just keep going. And that's an essential skill to being successful in clinical practice. Vigilance is also a huge skill. Being organized, being very detail-oriented, paying attention, catching little, I would say that the most successful anesthesia providers, it's not that they necessarily notice things when they're out of range. They notice trends or little tiny micro changes in patients' conditions that they pick up because they've just been paying attention that, like, hey, this person's tidal volume has always been around 400 during the entire case. Now it's hanging around like 650 or 600. And it's like, even though that's like still within normal range, that's different for the patient. And you've noticed that. And now you're realizing that, hey, maybe they're getting a little light. Maybe they're about to start coughing in about 30 seconds. It's just that extreme vigilance that you need to have to keep patients safe and being able to just be an excellent provider. Other skills, you know, empathy, EI, EQ, really important, teamwork, of course, professionalism in all aspects, leadership, becoming a leader in the OR, and like I said, again, attention to detail. Like I mentioned, having a soft skill is a compilation of a lot of different micro skills. So if we just take effective communication, what is somebody that has effective communication? What does that look like? People that are effective communicators can educate staff and patients and communicate well in urgent situations or when they have concerns. You can convey complex medical information into an understandable manner. Remember, surgeons, of course, went to medical school, and nurses that you work with are all really smart people, but they didn't go to anesthesia school. So you're trying to explain something that's happening on the anesthesia side of things in a way that they understand that, hey, this is something that's urgent. We need to pay attention to this. People that are good communicators are active listeners, and they repeat back what they hear. We also call this closed loop communication. So if somebody says something to you, you are taking what they say and saying it back to them to tell them that you understand what they're saying, right? You're really good at introductions and relationship building. You are talking out loud when you're problem solving. So if you're working with a preceptor and you're trying to figure out what's going on, talk out loud and tell them what your thought process is. So they see that, okay, they can communicate well, they're thinking through this problem. Don't just stand there in silence, you know, try to talk through that problem. Importantly, people that are good communicators are good when they're even under stress. You could be a good communicator when things are chill, but are you a good communicator when shit's hitting the fan, right? Are you still empathetic to your coworkers when stuff's not going well, when you're under a lot of stress? People take things personally. And when you say something under stress, they're just going to carry that with them for a long time. So making sure that you still maintain that effective communication, even when things are really stressful during codes, whatever's happening. And always, of course, being professional in your response. So what are the challenges that you're going to face as we wrap up this webinar? So everyone's going to face a difficult preceptor. Everyone, no matter where you go. And it's really, take my word for it. You might not believe me, but it has nothing to do with you, okay? It's not because of you. It's something else that's going on in their life. Maybe things are not great at home. Who knows? It could be a plethora of issues that has everything to do with them and nothing to do with you, okay? Some people are going through a lot in their lives and they are taking it out on you. And that's unfortunate, and it shouldn't be that way. And I think that for me personally, when I stopped taking it personally, then I wasn't as affected by it anymore. People are going to be who they're going to be. They're going to say what they're going to say. And unfortunately, you're the one that stuck with them that day.
I want to say something about that too. A lot of times when a preceptor is a little bit not allowing you to do something, just like a very typical thing, you know, the preceptor is just not letting you touch the patient or just jumping in all the time, and you're not learning anymore in the situation. Remember that that is not a reflection of you, like what Rhea said. And it's a lot of times it's a reflection of insecurity of the preceptor.
Yes.
And it doesn't, it's, sometimes it's not a bad thing. Sometimes, you know, the patient is too complex, they're afraid, and they don't know when to jump in. Like us, a lot of times a more confident CRNA knows when to jump in, and they'll still let you do a very complex procedure, a very complex patient. But a lot of times when a preceptor is not as confident in his or her own skill, sometimes they won't let you because they're afraid that you're going to make a mistake and they cannot fix it. So I just want to throw that in.
100% true.
Yeah.
100% true. I found that people that are not as skilled feel like they can't rescue you if something bad happens, right? Whereas people that are more skilled are like, I'm not going to let this person kill the patient, but I'm going to let them have a little bit more leeway because I have the skills to be able to back them out of the situation if that occurs, right? I was still watching, but still letting you do some more. Like I said, has nothing to do with you. Everything to do with the preceptor, okay? So don't take it personally. Don't let it get to you, okay? If you're getting feedback and they're just being an a-hole, okay, when they're giving you feedback, when I'm listening to it, I try to be as objective as possible and just pretend that they are talking about another person. It just helps me not get as my feelings hurt as much. But I'm like, okay, they're talking about Susie, my friend Susie or whatever. No, they're not talking about me. And just listen to the message, okay? Like I said before, listen to that deep message. Actually, nobody was ever taught how to teach or to be a good preceptor. And so there are people that still think about medicine as this hierarchy and treat students poorly and, you know, more of the older people. And that's unfortunate that that's the case. And so you'll definitely run into those people that are just crappy preceptors and you just got stuck with them that day. And keep in mind, like I said, it has nothing to do with you. As I get older, I try to have a little bit more empathy for people. I feel pity for people. I feel sorry for people. And I think when I change my mindset to that, rather than being defensive or angry, just feel bad for them. And that helps me, kind of get through working with them. And then also to be honest, you just be forthright. Like, think about it. Is there some truth to what they're saying? Even if they're not saying it in the most tactful way, is there some truth? Like, maybe what they're saying is like, hey, I remember one time I got in trouble for not acting professional in the OR because I was like showing somebody a picture on my phone, right? And I got in trouble for something like that. And they made a complaint that I wasn't being professional. And I think that initially I was like, but I was still taking care of the patient. Like the patient was fine, you know, in that period. And I was kind of getting defensive about it. But there's some truth to it, right? I'm a first year resident. I should be paying attention to the patient and not like, playing on my phone. And so I think that just be honest with yourself and just listen to the message. If there's some truth to it, take some ownership on it too. There's some ownership for you as well for that. Along the same lines is poor work culture. So maybe just not an individual person, but just the whole place is a mess. The whole place has poor culture, which is hard when you're at a place like that. I always try to find my champions there. There's maybe one or two people there that doesn't give in to all that and is like your go-to person that you can go to when you need to confide in somebody. Maybe that's your student preceptor, whoever that is. Definitely talk to your faculty and just let them know what's going on. You don't want them saying bad things about you because there's anything bad going on. They just a bunch of gossipers there, and it's a bad work culture. So just give your faculty a heads up that something weird is going on there. Remember to remind yourself what your goal is. Your main goal is to go there and learn how to be a safe and proficient provider and to get out. Okay. You're not taking a job there. You're not making friends there. You're not, you know, you're there to do your thing and get out of there. Definitely consider taking up some therapy if you need to. I go to therapy. Lots of residents go to therapy. My insurance pays for it. I'm still a grad student. So my, graduate school insurance pays for therapy. It just helps you just kind of deal with these from their home. Some people have children and then they have to do a rotation that's in another state. Yeah, that sucks. That's hard. Some people have really long commutes. And when you do these things, it will feel like you're starting all over again. Man, I just got competent spending a whole year at this clinical site. Now I'm at a brand new site again. I feel like I'm starting out day one. It can be isolating. And you just have to keep taking care of yourself mentally, physically. Stay connected. Don't isolate yourself. Frequently FaceTime people, your friends and your family. And just remember that everything is temporary. You will get through this. You know, you're going to be away for 3 months. You will get through this. It's going to look real sweet on the other side. But I know what you're that. I remember being like, after my first year, I was like, I think I'm going to drop out. This sucks. I don't think I could do this. I don't think this was made for me. I remember my student coordinator was like, you're not dropping out. You're going to stay, you know, you're going to stay here. I won't let you drop out. And he definitely kept like my head up. But it's hard sometimes because you feel like you're all alone. Keep taking care of yourself. Keep staying connected with people. The last thing I want to mention is adverse events. So say you have an adverse event with a patient, you make a mistake, there's some kind of bad patient outcome. My advice to you is to immediately report it yourself. The reason being is it sounds a lot better if they hear it from you first versus if they hear it from somebody else first, okay? They're going to hear about it anyway. Your faculty are going to hear about it anyway. It's going to get reported. So better to come from you than they're prompted. Then when the coordinator, whoever reports it to them, comes to them and they're like, I already know about this. Okay. So that's my first word of advice is to immediately be the one to report it to your faculty, your student coordinator. Take ownership of it and really be insightful as to what led to that event and ways that it could have been prevented. Just like any hospital error, there's usually a series of events that leads up to that event, right? Lots of little errors along the way. Lots of little fail-safe things that have happened that caused that to happen. Definitely come up with your own remediation plan and present it. This shows that you are really serious about improving. I would say that residents that we have let go from our program that have made a series of mistakes that led to adverse events, the reason why they were let go was not because of the adverse event itself. It's because these people never took ownership of it. So it was always somebody else's fault. Oh, you know, I mixed up the norepi and the lidocaine infusions because the PACU nurse distracted me. I did this because somebody else did this. And so it's when you're never, ever taking ownership of the things that have happened that you have caused, that's what ends up leading you to fail or get kicked out, not the mistake itself. Okay. So keep that in mind. Definitely stay on top of it and show that you're really serious about improving and getting better. So thank you guys so much. Our next webinar is next month, March 26th. We're going to do pharmacology. Y'all know this is my jam. I'm actually finishing my PhD in pharmacology in 2 months. So we'd love to do an intro to anesthesia pharmacology. That'll be a really fun one. Lots of cool stuff coming up. We're making a learning platform that's going to be released this summer. We just launched our YouTube channel, so we have 2 videos up there right now, so definitely check that out. Lots of newsletters, regular podcast episodes coming out each week. And if you're going to the ANA Annual Congress in Tennessee, we're going to be hosting the College Bowl this year, Sachi and I, so definitely come out for that. So thank you all so much. This is fun. Looking forward to seeing you next month. And if you have any suggestions for future webinars that you want to hear, please reach out to us. You can shoot me an email. And any last words that you want to say, Louisa? Thank you so much for coming on also. I think that just having somebody with so much experience, it's really great to hear.
Yeah, thank you so much. And oh my goodness, I'm so excited for you, Rhea. You're going to be a PhD coming. Yeah.
It's been 5 years. It's crazy.
Oh my God. But thank you so much, everyone, for listening to me. And I hope that I was able to give you a little bit of insight, get you ready for when I interview you for Kaiser. And that you're ready to take on the job. So yeah, this is fantastic. Thank you so much for putting this together, Rhea.
Yeah, of course. I'm excited for everybody. I know that this is such a rapid growth period for everybody, but I always say, like, nervousness is my, I try to turn that into like excitement. I'm not nervous. I'm excited, you know, and this is a really cool time period for all of you. So thank you all for sharing your evening with us. I'm definitely going to stay on if you want to hang out and ask some additional questions. It doesn't have to be about this webinar tonight, but otherwise we'll see everyone soon.